How's it going, everyone? Welcome to another edition of the Locked On Phillies podcast. I am your host, recent Temple Media School graduate and lifelong Philadelphia Phillies fan, Dan Wilson. And on today's episode, a very special guest, a part two episode with the deputy editorial director of PhilliesNation.com, Destiny Legardo. Discussed a number of things with Destiny, including Andrew Knapp's recent comments on MLB Network Radio about the future of the Phillies catching situation. Are the Phillies closing in on signing JT Realmuto? The Phillies bullpen strategy coming up this season with some of the moves that Dave Dombrowski has made here, as well as some potential rule changes going to 2021 and a whole lot more. So stay tuned for that. But without further ado, I present to you my conversation with Destiny Legardo.
Joining us on today's Locked On Phillies podcast, it is another member, I should say, of the Phillies Nation staff, the deputy editorial director of Phillies Nation, Destiny Legardo. Destiny, thank you for joining us here today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk Phillies baseball today. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, that's for sure. And before we get started, I did want to mention, because it came to my attention last week when I had Ty on the show, that while Tim Kelly held this position, he actually didn't have any of you on the podcast. So I'm happy to finally give the remainder of the staff a little bit more of a voice here. I'm going to have to talk to Tim about that. It's just despicable, in my opinion, that he wouldn't even use his own staff.
Yeah, I mentioned that. I actually went on the Locked On Orioles podcast, and I said something that I went on the Locked On Orioles podcast before the Locked On Phillies podcast. He was like, well, there's nothing I could do about it. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy that he had this podcast for so long and none of us went on it. It's kind of a miracle, actually.
Yeah, so I'm happy to have you on. And, you know, everyone at Phillies Nation is great. And again, if to any of the listeners who have not already checked out the work, great work. I've had you, obviously, or having you here today. I've had Ty Daubert, had Johnny Heller, Tim himself, who previously was the host of this podcast. As you mentioned, a lot to get to on the podcast, but I did want to start with something that you had quote tweeted yesterday most recently, and it's probably the biggest story of the Phillies offseason. We've gotten a few extra nuggets here, which is kind of the Phillies catcher situation going into 2021. Andrew Knapp, with a bit of a soundbite yesterday, kind of alluding to that he's preparing for potentially having a starting catching role in 2021, what he knows, what he doesn't know, obviously kind of anyone's guess at this point. I didn't take it to mean anything more than he knows there's a possibility. It does seem like other things are kind of factoring in the Phillies' favor in terms of other catchers going off the market, whether it be James McCann a while ago now, Kurt Suzuki. Where, in your opinion, does the JT Realmuto saga kind of lie here? And ultimately, do you think they get a deal done?
Oh, they're definitely signing JT Realmuto. And I think the people that are a little panicked about him not signing here, you just have to think of the possibilities. And if you think about it, really the Phillies and JT are his only fit. Like, the Mets have been out since December. The Angels just signed Kurt Suzuki. I didn't really think they were going to be in on JT because they need to spend their money on pitching. The Blue Jays, it looks like they want to sign everyone else but JT. The Yankees just signed DJ LeMahieu. So I think that really takes them out of this Realmuto sweepstakes. They need pitching too. And then the Nationals just signed Kyle Schwarber. And I really don't think they want to spend that money on JT if they didn't want to spend the money on Rendon. So, like, if you look around the league, like, there's not much competition for JT. It's really up to them to sign him. So I really don't see, like, a scenario where they don't sign him.
Okay. And what are we looking at contract here wise? Because, you know, LeMahieu signed for, I think it was 5 years, $110 million. There have been rumors that obviously he's not a catcher, but that there have been rumors that that would be around what Realmuto is maybe asking for. Now that he's not, that there are other teams who are potentially going to be in on him, not in on him, you would think that would give the Phillies a little bit of leverage here. How would you expect them to use that in terms of years, in terms of money? I don't know what your feeling on it is. Personally, I'd rather them dial back the years just a little bit, just because he's an aging catcher, but kind of how would you expect this deal to ultimately get done? And what are the details maybe going to look like?
I was really interested in the fact that DJ LeMahieu got 6 years for $90 million, mostly because he wanted to be a Yankee, okay, and the Yankees wanted to stretch that out. So it makes me think maybe JT will get 6 years because, you know, with the Bryce Harper contract, they wanted to stretch that out as much as they can to keep the AAV down. And like you said, I don't think it's a smart idea because he's an aging catcher. But if they're, you know, tempted with the idea that there's not much competition for JT, and if they want to keep the AAV down and maybe think that they could be a little more competitive than they originally thought they could this season, they could, you know, stretch that out. I really don't think that's a smart idea, and I'll be disappointed if they do that, because, you know, they could probably get 5 years at, let's say, 20 at most, like 25 million a year. Maybe they could do, you know, something creative, like with the Liam Hendricks deal, you know, that weird option or whatever. But like, I don't know, if I were the Phillies, I would avoid a 6 year, but, you know, to them, it's tempting because they seem to have the tendency to want to stretch the contracts out.
Yeah, thank you for correcting me, actually. It was initially reported that it might be a five-year deal. He did end up getting six, not necessarily as much money. I'm talking about LeMahieu, of course. But no, I'm with you on Real Muto. I think in terms of the amount of years you give him, they do like to stretch it out. I personally would not go in that direction, especially because it looks like they're going to have more available money in payroll than they have had in years past. I'll switch our attention to the bullpen here. Finally, kind of, it's been a very slow-moving offseason, maybe even slower than usual, because you don't have the names like Harper and Machado kind of clouding everything, but at the same time, still pretty slow. The Phillies did finally make a move yesterday in terms of free agent signing, getting Archie Bradley. They, of course, traded the first move, I believe, that Dombrowski made was trading for Jose Alvarado. What do you make of kind of the strategy? Since Dombrowski's taken over, the strategy they're taking, kind of going after some harder throwers who, you know, obviously under Klintak, it was always made of a big deal, kind of how they never seemed to have guys who could throw over 95. I know Connor Brogdon last year was a hard thrower, but they seem to be taking on guys, and maybe this is my read on it, maybe it's not yours, that have had control issues in the past. They believe they can kind of fix those. Coonrod's another guy who they acquired since Dombrowski's taken over. Are we looking at a different bullpen? Certainly we're looking at a different bullpen in 2021, but a different bullpen strategy than they've utilized in the past?
Yeah, right now where the bullpen is, it's definitely better than, you know, when they started in 2020 and at any point in 2020. But I saw a tweet, Farhan Zaidi, I believe, he said that in this league, like, he's, a lot of people are going for velocity, but there is value to deception and all that. So, like, the Phillies are kind of maybe going on this, like, I don't know if it's a misguided strategy, but like, it's a basic strategy of like, velocity is good. And it's kind of hard to, you know, say that Caleb Cotham can fix control because it's his first year as a pitching coach. And, you know, instead of having three pitching coaches, they're going to have two pitching coaches. So it's going to be tough for Cotham if his task is to figure out command with these pitchers that have good velocity.
More of the Locked On Phillies podcast and my conversation with Destiny coming right up, where we'll discuss the Phillies bullpen strategy heading into 2021, some potential rule changes and how that will affect the Phillies and the landscape of baseball moving forward and beyond. But first, I want to tell you about my friends at BetOnline. Look, there's only one place that has you covered and one place we here at Locked On trust. BetOnline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag. Use that promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. And look, there's plenty to bet on these days. We have a full slate of four NFL divisional games coming at you this weekend. The NBA has full slates of games every single night these days. The NHL has full slates of games every single night these days. College basketball has full slates of games every single night these days. Maybe you bet on the Sixers. They've been rolling lately. You like their point spread. Maybe you like the money line. Maybe even you like the over-under. The Flyers are 2-0. Look like one of the best teams in the NHL. Here as we're midway through the first week as they swept the Pittsburgh Penguins at home. And again, there's a lot of local and national college basketball to bet on. There's really no excuse to just be watching and not getting in on the action. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on that action. Don't forget to use that promo code LOCKEDON to receive your 50% welcome bonus. Again, the promo code is LOCKEDON to receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Hey, what's up, everyone? Dan Wilson here from the Locked On Phillies podcast, telling you about my friends at rockauto.com. Look, with the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models of cars, it's impossible to stock up on all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the counterman orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand that their warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com prices are the same for everybody and reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices available rather than charging prices based on what the market will bear just like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everyone, does not require membership or account login. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for more than 20 years. Go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts of hundreds of manufacturers. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. More of the Locked On Phillies podcast coming right up. But first, I want to tell you about another podcast here on the Locked On Network that you might enjoy. It's Locked On MLB. Join walking baseball encyclopedia Paul Francis Sullivan, and please call him Sully, every day on Locked On MLB for a unique look at the majors, both present and past. Featuring exciting guest interviews, routine check-ins from the Locked On MLB Network's team of local experts, and insightful analysis on the day's biggest stories. Locked On MLB is the single best source for daily baseball talk. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts.
And hopefully, you know, what, this is the fifth Phillies pitching, was the fifth or sixth Phillies pitching coach in as many years. So maybe he's someone who actually sticks around for more than a season. This time around, you know, it doesn't really seem very practical for the development of any pitcher, quite frankly, especially guys in the bullpen who can kind of be circling in and out, to continually utilize different strategies moving forward. So maybe Cotham does actually stick around. I wanted to kind of reference an article that you had written for Phillies Nation recently about kind of the landscape of the NL East. Obviously, one of the biggest moves of the offseason was the Mets acquiring Francisco Lindor and Carlos Carrasco. This NL East, at least in my opinion, is even more difficult now than it was last year. One of the toughest divisions in all of baseball. That can't fare well for this team who just failed to miss a 16-team playoff bracket.
Yeah, actually say that one more time. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you're fine. So in terms of just the NL East getting better and where the Phillies currently stand, it seems like they've expected to make the playoffs in a few previous seasons. They just failed to miss an expanded playoff bracket in a shortened season. And now the Braves can continue to be good with their young stars. The Mets have certainly seemingly gotten better this offseason. Where do the Phillies, in your opinion, stand in this NL East that seems to be one of the most, if not the most, competitive division in all of baseball?
Yeah, I think they're third best team at the best. But a lot of people are saying that the Nationals are definitely better than them. I don't know if that's particularly true. Like, Max Scherzer is getting up there in age. I don't agree with, you know, giving Strasburg that big contract. They got the best of him in 2019. I mean, they got Juan Soto, and when you have a guy like that, you always have a good chance to win the division. But I mean, the Braves, they're a lot better than the Phillies. They have Acuna. His contract is probably the best in the league right now. They have him under control, I think, till 2029. And Albies is under control for a long time. So if you look at, you know, the cores of the Braves and the Mets, they somewhat have like their core under control, maybe less than the Mets. I know DeGrom has an opt out after this year. They know Syndergaard is going to be a free agent. Marcus Stroman's going to be a free agent. So you don't really have that rotation solidified. That lineup is dangerous, but you know, the Phillies, as we all know, they have this very good core, but they have a very hard time at, you know, finishing the roster. And with the way the Braves and the Mets are, it's going to be hard to really, you know, climb past them in the next few years. But I think they should at least try. You know, they've acquired the core. I don't think there's much to just giving them up and kind of going into a rebuild.
That was going to be my next question in terms of the timeline of this team. How do you view it? You have guys like Alec Bohm, who played very well last year. You have guys like Rhys Hoskins, Bryce Harper, of course, Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, who are all seemingly win now players, and they seem to have a core, but they could never really round out the roster to kind of complement those guys. Are we looking at the rotation as it stands entering 2021? Do you expect they'll add anyone else? Vince Velasquez is coming back, which I know is exciting everyone across the Delaware Valley to get another year of Vinny Velo, but like, it never seems like the back end of the rotation is where it needs to be. The bullpen certainly was not where it needs to be. And even the starting lineup, like, Didi Gregorius is still floating out there. They didn't give him a qualifying offer, but he still is a possibility to come back to this team. If not, you're looking at Scott Kingery, Gene Segura playing every day. I wanted to get to the center field situation and Dombrowski's comments about that in a moment. But the timeline of this team, is it realistic that this team could compete in the next few years? And how does that pertain to a guy like Real Muto, where seemingly you're going to sign him? If you bring him on for 5 years, you're really trying to get production out of the first two or three. but the division being as tough as it is and the roster being the way that it is it all adding up in your opinion?
Maybe not this year. I do think 2022 and 2023 are years where they could at least try and, you know, spend a little more. It's really up to how much money John Middleton wants to spend, because he could get Dave Dombrowski and maybe he could do a better job at Matt Klentak of finding those marginal upgrades. But really, it's going to be a matter of, you know, does John Middleton want to win enough to, you know, give him enough money to compete? But yeah, I mean, for the, as far as the rotation goes, you have Eflin, Wheeler, and Nola all locked up till 2023. So that's a pretty good rotation. And then, you know, Spencer Howard, he could rebound this year, but he's going to be on some kind of an innings limit. You know about Vince Velasquez. He kind of is what he is at this point. You don't really expect much of him. But, you know, as Dave Dombrowski said, their three needs are bullpen, catcher, and shortstop. I do think they're looking at starting pitching, but they're not going to go into a bidding war for a number four starter. They could sign Corey Kluber, but, you know, if 25 other teams were at that showcase for him, I don't think the Phillies will match another offer for him. But, I mean, they could find another starter that's in Vince Velasquez's price range that probably isn't as good as Vince Velasquez, crazy as that sounds. But it's more about depth this year than anything, because so many pitchers lost innings last year. So you never know, like, they've been pretty lucky with, well, Wheeler got injured last year, but they've been pretty lucky with injuries with Nola. You know, Eflin got injured in 2019, but they're going to need to have multiple starters. And I think it's a good idea to get a start. I don't know if they will.
How's this opening day lineup shaking up? What are you projecting? Do you think it's kind of what it is right now? Do they bring someone back like Gregorius at a cheaper price than maybe originally anticipated? Do they go get someone else? Are we looking at 162 games, not 162, but largely everyday play from someone like Scott Kingery, whether it be in the infield or in a center field scenario?
Yeah, I think with Didi, it's a matter of if they could get him on a one-year deal, they will, because they want to get in on that shortstop class next year. And I think there's a good chance that Didi will get a one-year deal. I really don't know how his market's going to shape up. I don't think many teams are going to be in on him. So, I mean, we'll see with that, but I do think they'll sign another shortstop. Dave Dombrowski also said that pretty much everyone available on the market is an option for them at shortstop. So, you know, you'll probably see them linked to Andrelton Simmons. Like, obviously they were linked to Freddie Galvis. Really anyone can be in on there. I really don't think they want to sign. They don't want Scott Kingery playing every day. He hasn't really proved that he could be an everyday player, and he has proven that his value to them is kind of filling in the holes whenever they need him. And for the Phillies, they really hope that the DH comes back, because you really don't want a player like Andrew McCutchen having to play every day. I'm not sure if he could, you know, take charge in center. I mean, not center field, left field, but yeah. And like I said, I think they're going to sign JT, so he'll be in the middle of that order. But yeah, I don't really know if it's like completely solidified, but like, as far as the opening day lineup goes, it's pretty much what they have.
Nor do I want Scott Kingery coming back and playing virtually every day for what it's worth here. You brought up the DH there, and there was an article I was reading, I don't know if you saw it or not, in The Athletic yesterday, I believe it was, from Jason Stark, about a proposed new designated hitter rule. There's obviously people who stand pro DH, against the DH. Basically, every guest I've had on, I took over the show from Tim back in October, and I was thinking, you know, I'll ask the first few guests, like, what's your stance on it? And I figured we would have a ruling at least for 2021 by now, but we're sitting here on January 15th and still it's up in the air, like the future of the designated hitter in baseball. I'll ask you point blank. I would argue, and I don't know if there's really any grounds to disagree, though I'd certainly hear out any argument, that from a Phillies perspective, having the DH is definitely beneficial, not just this year, but moving forward. From an overall baseball perspective, where do you stand? I'll quickly give you my take. In general, I'm anti DH, just not, again, from a Phillies perspective, but I like the strategy that goes into it. However, this new rule that was proposed in the Stark article about the DH being pulled when you pull your starting pitcher, I find very intriguing. I actually kind of wish, in hindsight, they tried it in this, you know, altered 2020 season that we had. So where do you stand on the DH? What do you ultimately expect is the future of the DH? And where do you, how do you see it kind of playing out? And for the, from the Phillies' perspective, they have a lot of guys, not just McCutchen, in my opinion, whether it be Hoskins, Bohm, Bryce Harper, as he ages into his career, guys who you don't necessarily want playing the field every day, Realmuto being another one.
Yeah, I'm a DH fan. I thought I would miss pitchers hitting, but really it's just like the rare moment that something good happens, like the Brett Myers walk or just Aaron Nola hitting a double off of Cole Hamels or something like that. I don't miss pitchers like, you know, wailing at the third strike. I don't know. As far as the that Jason Stark article, I kind of believe like the players won't go for that because it devalues like the DH. Like, why would they spend on a DH if they're only gonna, if they're not gonna be hitting in the most crucial points of the game? I heard somebody, I was listening to MLB Network Radio earlier, and somebody had like this idea that's very simple, but no one's really like thrown out there. Like, why don't the NL just have 8 hitters instead of?
I mean, now
how would you feel about that?
Now you're really, I mean,
that's, it's kind of, yeah, it's crazy.
You're really, you know, my grandparents who like baseball are flipping over in their grave thinking about that idea. I mean, you're really pissing off the diehards. I don't know. 8 hitters. I don't know if I like, so only in the National League, this proposal. So the AL just has 9 hitters.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that like
on first hearing this, I'm against it. I think a big thing I have, and to be perfectly clear, I don't miss the aspect of pitchers hitting. I agree with you. I think it's an over-glorified thing. Look, Mets fans retweet the Bartolo Colon home run every year. Like, you know, I'm kind of sick of it. The Myers walk was cool. Archie Bradley, who the Phillies just got, had an postseason hit triple like 3 years ago. No, I don't need to save that part. I more so like the manager's aspect of it, if it's like another thing to keep track of, which is kind of why I like the Stark proposed rule of it's something you basically have to manage around. No, the pitcher hitting, and it's not necessarily good for baseball either. Like, if a Major League Baseball, I'm probably going forward with the DH. I can't believe that it's taken this long for them to at least try it in the National League. And I, even more so than that, I can't believe that this isn't just the excuse to keep it. Maybe that's just signifies how far apart the players union and where the owners are. I can't say that I'd be in favor of the 8 batters hitting. I think at that point you just put a DH and have a 9th hitter playing. Like, I don't even really know why that would be better than having a DH. I've never really liked the fact either that there's 2 different rules in 2 different leagues. It's the only sport that does that, and it's based out of tradition. But like, why do we do it? Like, the Rangers, I always point back to this, got screwed because Nelson Cruz had to play right field in a World Series game. He didn't have to do that the whole year. In what other sport would you see, like in the NBA, they change a little rule between the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference? I don't know what a good analogy it would be for that, but like, the fact that we're changing rules mid-series in the biggest games of the year has never really sat right with me. I'd almost rather the NL just get the DH at this point, because I kind of feel like it's coming anyway. It would expand the DH market to all 30 teams rather than just 15 of them. And if, you know, the Phillies ever get back to the World Series or whoever it is, we're not changing it up. Like, I think it should just be consistent at this point. I'm not one of these people who's like, I'm anti-DH, so I want my team to not have it, even though half of the teams in baseball have. Like, I think it's gone on for too long, but that's kind of just my viewpoint on. And from a Phillies perspective, I think the DH absolutely benefits.
That'll wrap it up for part 1 of my conversation with Destiny Legardo. Again, if you liked what you heard in part 2, we continue more into what the opening day lineup might look like for this team, Dave Dombrowski's recent comments about what center field is going to look like in 2021 and beyond, the landscape of this now more competitive, at least in my opinion, National League East, that and a whole lot more in part 2. Again, thank you for listening to part 1. Stay tuned for part 2.